to run up here. Okay, you're mentioning being in meetings where there were many views being presented.
Right,
yeah.
many views being presented. At first I thought that the individuals there, the laboratory directors and their supporting people, just didn't want to give in from their own point of view. That, in other words, they were sort of stubborn. They wanted to stand fast. Gradually, though, and at that time, I thought, well, by gosh, why doesn't someone, in this case it would be very appropriate for Dr. Von Braun to do it, say, okay, let's stop this arguing, and damn it, I'm going to make a decision, that's the way it's going to be, period. No. But Dr. Von Braun really wasn't that kind of man, and as it turned out, the way he handled it was probably the best possible way that it could be handled. For example, Dr. Von Braun, in conducting a meeting like this, very obviously was drawing out everyone in the meeting who would be a participant in any action that resulted from the decisions made in the meeting. He was drawing out from all of those future participants their views, their hesitations, their limitations in their own laboratory. And he did it in such a fashion that they were never embarrassed. And then when all of the views had finally been presented, Dr. Von Braun would try to synthesize everything into one final summary session. In other words, he would put all of the pieces together. And this is where he was really a person that could not be matched by anyone else. He was a master at assimilating information, integrating it in his own mind, and then pouring it forth in a fashion that was understandable to anyone that was listening. And he did it in such a logical fashion that most persons could not argue or find fault with the conclusions that he drew, even though he didn't do it by pounding the table and say this is the way it's going to be done, but rather he did it by saying, well, then it seems that because of this, we should go in the following direction. And as a result, everyone did indeed know what he was thinking when he summarized his thoughts. He also most frequently took the very diplomatic approach of turning to the persons who had presented views which opposed the final outcome and said, all right, now how does this sound to you now? Do you think you can live with it? Does it sound logical and reasonable? And almost always that person would say, all right, I'll accept it. It sounds okay. I think we can do our part. And so when the meeting ended, there was a unanimous feeling of sense of direction. Everyone believed in the same goal. Let's say everyone believed in attaining the same goal. Everyone understood the direction to be taken. And even more important, and this is something that I myself did not realize at the beginning, even more important is that every person in that room knew what the strengths and the limitations and the personal hesitations were on the part of every other laboratory, every other person that was there. So this quotation marks arguing, close quotations, that seemed rather irrelevant to me when I first came here, proved to be really the most effective means of communication that we had. Everyone fully understood in just as much detail as Dr. Von Braun did why we had done certain things, why certain decisions had been made, why we were going in a certain direction, why we had to do it a certain way. This was really a very, very productive way in which to get everyone on board at the same time. So, to me, much of the success of the Von Braun team depends, much of the credit, much of the success of the Von Braun team must be given to the fact that there was such great amount of communication, and to the effect, and to the fact that Dr. Von Braun then synthesized everything in such a masterful fashion, and then set forth the conclusions that were so very logical and so understandable to everyone there.
I've heard it said that he never really said, this is the way it will be done. And it was always a matter of convincing or reaching, you know, just a wholehearted consensus that this was, in spite of certain limitations, the best way to do it. And that he never really closed the meeting until the last man in the room was obviously, sincerely, at least, willing to go along with it.
That's very true. Yeah. That's very true. And to me, that's one of the strong points. And this isn't this isn't something that's just come to light recently. I suppose Dr. Stewart, I hope that Dr. Stewart mentioned that we had prepared this book, which was which honored the 50th birthday of Dr. Von Braun. And there are a few words in here in the preface that describes just the things that I was mentioning. And the preface was written by Fred Ordway and Dr. Stuhlinger and Jerry McCall and myself. Mm-hmm. Let's see now. Yeah, here's something, just quoting from the preface of this book. Those who've worked with him for years point to another gift that may be more responsible for his unparalleled successes than any of his other many brilliant talents. It is his innate capability as a great engineer to make the transition from an idea, a dream, a daring thought, to a sound engineering plan, and to carry his plan most forcefully through its final accomplishment. It points out that the reins were loose during the first phase. Many ideas were considered and pursued. Large number of studies were made. Different designs were investigated. Schedules were established and modified. Ideas of others were analyzed and compared. Opinions were requested from many outside sources. Every possible facet of the new project is discussed in technical meetings, where Dr. Von Braun always provides guidance with the most inquisitive questions, the sharpest mind, the most convincing arguments, and the most tireless quest for further analyses. And that's about it. So it's something that we did indeed recognize. When it's all over, when a meeting such as this is all over and you look back on it, you recognize that if there were 20 different people with 20 different ideas on how to approach a particular task that was being discussed, there was a marvelous transformation, so that everyone homed in on the same procedure or the same approach before they left the room, and that everyone was thinking as one when they left.
What happened when someone like Miller from headquarters came down? Did Von Braun was still able to convince someone like Miller as well?
Well, let's put it this way, not in all instances, but he was certainly able to convince many, many people of the soundness of his ideas. Often there were restraints of a political nature, for example, that made it impossible to really accept the proposals set forth by Dr. von Braun. So it really wasn't always the lack of soundness or the lack of Dr. von Braun's ability to convince others of the wisdom of his thoughts. There were political restraints that kept us from doing certain things at certain times.
Would you be willing to pinpoint one or two of those?
Why, sure. One is the launching of the first satellite. The world's first satellite. I mean, Explorer 1 was could have been launched by the ABMA team, yet because political considerations, ABMA was not allowed to launch that. But the Vanguard was officially and formally recognized as the United States' first explorer. I mean, first satellite in space.
Were there any similar occasions that you recall during the heart of the Saturn program where there were political limitations?
These are the kinds of things that we really didn't see too much in the space sciences laboratory because, as I mentioned, we were in a supporting role rather than in a direct responsibility role. Now, I'm sure that Dr. Stuhlinger, as director of the Space Sciences Laboratory, participated in many meetings, many decision-making discussions such as this, but I was assistant director in the laboratory and prior to that time assistant to the director in the laboratory. So I personally did not get into many of those very momentous decision-making sessions in the Saturn program.
Do you recall any events in the program that have special meaning for you? I mean, really high points that you felt tremendously good about, a sense of satisfaction?
Well, I think surely the one high point has to be the successful launch of the very first Saturn.
Yeah.
There was very great there was very great desire among everyone in the Marshall Center to see that the vehicle flew successfully.
Excuse me, you're thinking about the Saturn 1, the very first,
yes,
or the Saturn 5?
No, Saturn 1.
Saturn 1.
Right. Saturn 1. I think it was about October 1960 or thereabouts.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were all no, I'm sorry, not 1960, it was about 61.
I've got it in my briefcase here, but
right. But anyway, we were everyone was very, very thrilled with the success of that first launch.
Mm-hmm.
And of course everyone was extremely thrilled with the first manned launch of the Saturn. And with the Apollo 8 first
circumlunar
mission. These were all very, very high points. So I guess that as we have reached a greater number of peaks of enthusiasm over, as the years have gone by, we can look back with less feeling upon them, but at those times, they were very, they were, we, everyone was very, very highly motivated to see that the, or to hope and to wish for and to try to see that those missions were successes.
Okay, I don't want to put undue stress on this, but I just want to get them straight in my own mind. The first Saturn launch then, and the first manned Saturn V launch, and the launch of Apollo 8, the circumlunar
thing. Right.
All right, do you have any other summary comments or reflections you want to read into our tape recorder here?
No, not at the present time. Once again, or let me say just one more thing. I think that we've seen quite a transition in the scientific activities of the center, as evidenced by the activities of Space Sciences Laboratory, just as an example. First, in 1956, we were interested in all scientific aspects of the space program. And not only the scientific problems that were related to the development of a launch vehicle, but we were also concerned with the scientific problems related to the development of payloads, and we were concerned with the scientific findings of those payloads. Starting in 1960, then, our view was restricted somewhat because we were then mostly concerned with the scientific problems related to the development of launch vehicles only, since we did not have responsibility for the development of payloads. Now we have progressed to the point where our realm of interest is just as broad and broader than it was during the ABMA days. In other words, Marshall has gone through the phase of being a launch vehicle developer, is now in the phase of being a payload developer as well, and we're working very closely with principal investigators who have experiments on those payloads. And so we're very deeply involved in the scientific objectives of the payloads as well as the development of the scientific payloads.
Did this new scientific emphasis begin with the Skylab program?
It came to the Skylab was surely one of the the big steps, because the Apollo telescope mount is indeed a scientific payload which is carried, or which is a component part of Skylab.
Mm-hmm.
And the ATM did represent a very big payload development effort on the part of Marshall. That's, so far as I recall, that probably was the big step for Marshall to get back in the payload development business. And the ATM.
Okay then. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you.